Good afternoon. It's the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I am Phil Taylor, the host, and with me is Phil Connon. How are you doing, Phil?
Yes, good afternoon, Phil.
So we're going to we have some news today. We've got all kinds of developments. What's the biggest news? Well, the sun is out, for one thing, which is...
That's news.
You must have been shocked. I know I was.
Yeah, I had to cover my eyes. I didn't try to remember what it was.
Yeah, you know all those movies about the mold coming out or whatever it was? And then you say, ah, so good. Anyway, it's quite welcome. So today we're going to be... We're very fortunate. We're going to have a UN, former UN rapporteur on Palestinian human rights in the occupied territories, and Professor Michael Link, he will be on at about 5:30. We're very anxious to be speaking with him because, actually, when we originally thought, wanted to contact Professor Link and talk to him about developments, it was more in the, I would say, a month or so back. When the discussion had to do with the status of the people of Gaza and the West Bank, is to get to get it clear. And my original intent was to ask about the question of statehood, because there had been a kerfuffle at the United Nations Security Council, where there were very spokespersons for the Israel and the Palestinians were present, and I thought, who better than Professor Link to help us out? So he agreed, but we've been working on dates to talk about it, but since then a few other things have happened. And we've had this report from the International Court of Justice, a world court. I'll remind our listeners it was established in 1948, the founding of the United Nations. They didn't establish this thing called the ICC, which anyone who studies that will know is designed to punish Africans, and strictly, actually revealing the the colonial outlook of the Western state. And it's the little cousin, perhaps not. Can I use the word bastard? Anyhow, it's not real. But the International Court of Justice is real. If you're a member of the United Nations and you sign on, you can end up in that court, or you can accuse others, and they can, because you're a sovereign country and you have that power. So we've had this pretty remarkable moment that has occurred with the findings of the court. I mean, that is what's going to be the... Of course, the core of our questions for Professor Michael Link. And I'm going to tell you, just remind you, by the way, that he is a professor of law at the University of Western Ontario, and he is he served as a United Nations rapporteur on human rights of Palestinians, that's specifically to do with Palestinians in occupied Palestine. And he also is the co-author of a book which was published actually a year ago this month. And in that sense, it's a new book. And he co-authored it with Professor Falk, who is, I think it's Richard Falk.
Richard Falk, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And he's probably the best-known name in this field.
Yeah.
And I have the title of... The sun is out, but it's dark where I am. But I have the title, I believe it. I'll get it for you. Because among the things we can do by way of preparation for our interview at 5:30 is tell you that protecting human rights in occupied Palestine. With a specific reference to the responsibilities of the United Nations, and that's Professor Falk, Dugard, and Michael Link. And I would urge everybody to get that book. It seems to me you couldn't be more, if you're looking for the background, the legal background of what is going on today and being debated, that would be probably the first place to go. If you're interested in, let's put it this way, arguments with substance and arguments based on international law. What is the expression we use here, Phil? We have Minister Freeland and our Prime Minister and our Minister of International, what do they call it, Global Relations.
Global Affairs.
Global Affairs.
Affairs,
you say. Yeah, well, you know, you think you're talking about Clinton or something, yeah. Or Trump, but no, it's Global Affairs. But they say, what is it, values, rules-based?
Rules-based, international rules-based order based on democratic values.
Democratic values.
Yeah, you go.
With no reference to the United Nations.
No.
This is a...
Well, they don't have democratic values, the United Nations. They allow...
We are a free country.
Yeah.
We make things up.
See, every time that Iran or China or some other member in good standing sits on a committee, you'll find journalists here will say, what is going on at the United Nations? So-and-so is on a committee. They shouldn't be on a committee.
You know? Yeah. Yes. And so we take away their visa when they want to come to attend the UN. Yeah. The UN has a real, I believe there, one of the things that sets a backdrop to talking to Professor Link is that the United Nations is treated as a kind of a poor relative of the United States. The headquarters is in the United States. And it is problematic. If you're a country that is not exactly getting along with Los Estados Unidos, then they will bother your staff. And when they apply for a visa to attend a United Nations-sponsored conference, for example, they won't get them. Or they will be told, we're still looking at it. So meanwhile, should I unpack my bags or do I attend the conference? So the bad faith of the U.S.-led Western powers towards the U.N. is becoming a little stark, and I think it's dangerously stark, actually, at the moment, because now we have the scandal of the day, in my opinion, is that the United Nations Relief Organization is now being punished and deprived of funds when its function is to provide food and aid of all types to the refugees, Palestinian refugees.
Healthcare, education, food, you know, the most basics in life, right?
The things that General Gallant said he was going to cut off, Canada and the United States has agreed to cut off. It's quite a moment. And they're trying to sell it. I read in the Globe today and other papers that the way they're selling it is that, a growing number of countries. Yes, all the white countries have decided that they should do this. And of course, not
we want to remind you, Phil, that Japan is an honorary white country because they joined the parade today too. But all the countries that cut them off have a history of colonialism and having attacked indigenous populations. So it's not as if Israel is doing something that they're not comfortable with.
One could guess that they maybe think that they're thinking they could end up in the dock down the road. Mm-hmm. You remember the United States was very late to sign, if it ever did sign, the Genocide Convention at the UN because as representatives of the segregated South in the American Congress pointed out that they would be potential targets of a prosecution. And they knew better than to want to sign that. But then, of course, the doctrine of exceptionalism kicked in, and they were assured that no one will ever charge U.S. because they're not allowed. Now today's, to me, there are many headlines today, troubling ones. We'll talk more about this matter of this decision to collectively punish people of Gaza, joined in by Canada and the United States. By the way, not by Norway. I noticed Norway, to its great credit, is saying No, we're not going to be part of this. Ireland.
They don't have a history of colonialism, and neither do the Irish.
Yeah. And the Scots. The Scottish has, they have a kind of a, like Quebec, they have a kind of a status quo, and they are completely opposed to this. But we'll see if they're able to pull it off, because they're using the old stunt of trying to pretend a great majority of countries are for it. Actually, it's only in the white European countries, and not all of them. Although I think the EU joined in today, but what choice have they got? It's, they do as they're told. But there's a headline in the Globe, which is, to me, symptomatic of why we had the Taylor Report, and we talked to people like Professor Link, and try to cast light on matters. You know, Theodore Dreiser, the American writer, said, "We don't need freedom of the press. We need freedom from it." And he meant by that that they do a lot of terrible things. And so if you're just following along and not thinking critically, you're being led by the nose by people who are up to no good. And the headline here is, "Biden promises response after drone strike by Iran-backed group kills 3 U.S. soldiers." The trick in that headline is Iran-backed. That is a meaningless, empty claim. And if you notice, when they talk about Yemen and the Houthi government, which has decided it is not going to allow passage of ships going to Israeli ports or port, they say Iran-backed. And when they talk about the Lebanese resistance group called Hezbollah, which, by the way, was created as a result of an invasion of Lebanon by Israel. It didn't exist before, but they came into being because the Israelis, for a time, thought they were going to remain. And the local people said they actually should go home. But the term, and this is just a political term, put into headlines and reporting, Iran back, that's in order to say bad guy. They're bad. And, of course, it wants you to believe from that ordinary Iraqis, ordinary Syrians, ordinary Lebanese wouldn't do anything if it wasn't for the Islamic Republic. Somebody, some wag today had a good, you know, Phil, you must read a lot of Twitter.
Right? I do.
Yeah. I do.
Lots of wags on Twitter.
and it's very hard to take your eye off it, right? I mean, you get the story, and then... So somebody's made a nice comment, or funny comment, in my opinion. He said, there are so many places in the world where the U.S. says that group is Iran-backed that they ought to add that means that Iran is a superpower.
Well, that's a wonderful observation.
Yeah. That, what do you know? I mean, they run everything. And so... But what we really have in Syria, and this is where we have to underline the problem, the United States still has troops. I shouldn't say still. I mean, they're adding to the troops that they have in Syria. But the focus, and we've talked about it on the show, it's not talked about on the CBC and elsewhere very often. But the United States has a serious military presence in northeastern Syria, along the border with Iraq, and they, if the locals object to them, they're called Iran-backed, and they're also called terrorists. And when those locals do anything against the presence, the illegal presence of the United States military in Syria, the United States says, "We reserve our right to self-defense." Or what? We are exercising self-defense. That's impossible. I mean, we live in the land of utter gullibility. I think this is about, 8,000 miles, 8 to 11,000 miles away from the United States. Oh, I thought you were going to say it to me. Now, we've talked about that base in the Northeast. I don't know what that is. But the one that we have also called attention to, and people are not aware of so much, is there's a U.S. presence inside Syria. There's a military presence, U.S. soldiers, inside Syrian territory. There's a place called, I think, El Tanf. Now, the U.S. is claiming that they were hit over the weekend in Jordanian territory, that they were in Jordan. So, you see, that would mean that the bad Syrian followers of Iran are hitting Jordan. I mean, that would be the kind of one, two, three, you know, if you believe A, you believe B, you believe C. It's called, I didn't know, it's called Tower 22. And there is a military presence, of course, on the Jordanian side. Actually, what they do is they're straddling the border and they're moving troops and they're training. I was reading the Syrian press today. Incidentally, as you know, it's forbidden. That's why you're not reading it, is that people are afraid to actually just ask, so what does Syria say? Syria says that this base is there to train terrorists against them. Because after all, I mean, can anybody, does people remember or have they forgotten how Syrian citizens were taken out of their mosques, out of their schools, out of their homes, lined up in those little pink costumes, and their throats cut? Throat by people backed by Saudi Arabia and the United States. That's a fact. So Syria has successfully overcome that phenomena, but they have not. Now, you know, of course, they're faced with the difficult question of what do you do about the hard, I emphasize, H-A-R-D, hard presence of real American troops inside your country. If you strike them, we all know that the American Congress and the President of the United States will go ballistic. Basically, that's what they promised to do. We will go ballistic. Anybody touches one of our guys. Though their guys are in Syria where they do not belong at all. And I hope, like in our discussion today with Professor Link at 5:30, touch on this business of sovereignty. Because the United States does not respect sovereignty. You may be aware, Phil, if you've seen the headlines, U.S. is talking, is once again using this old line, we are now going to initiate a withdrawal of U.S. forces in Iraq. They were 2 years ago, they said they would leave Iraq, and they were told by the Iraqi government, the current government of Iraq, you must leave. You said you would leave, so go. But they don't go. So now they're doing this little shuffle, what they call that, the Buffalo Shuffle, where they say, yeah, well, we're going to draw, there's another term they use, draw down our troops. This event of the striking, the killing, three U.S. soldiers died, and they say that 32 were badly injured. It's funny, by the way, I notice when they talk about their medically, to speak of them, they say that they have some kind of trauma to the head. And I recall that the only other place I saw that was when there was a strike at a base in Iraq, and they said that. Usually they don't talk in those terms. I mean, you say, okay, 30 people hurt and six died, but this one is head trauma. I wish, you know, I know there are people who follow these things minutely. I wish they'd look closely. What the heck are they? Why is this being talked about? What kind of weapon do they think they're describing? You know? But again, to underline, now we know that the U.S. has a based inside Syria. We're being reminded, it was not a secret, but people don't talk about it. Inside, not just in the northeast, they have one on the Jordanian border, which is, and it straddles the border. And if you recall, years ago, there was a thing called the White Helmets. they've now, Hollywood decided to get rid of them. It's kind of like a guy who's served his time and wasn't terribly useful, so they, and they got them all out. You remember when they removed the white helmets?
Yeah, some of them through Israel. That was interesting. Some of them exited through Israel.
And they currently live here now with us.
Right.
And they're marvelous people, except they never do anything. And they allegedly are there to help civilians, except they're doing it. They're not doing it anymore. So when, but this base, the Al-Tanf base, is one of the places that coordinated that operation. And when they were exiting, that was one of the places that they had an exit. Terrorists, anti-Syrian government terrorists, can go in and out of this base. And the U.S., by the way, has a perimeter. Military bases usually have perimeters of sorts. And they have told the Syrians, you can't come into that perimeter. And if you say, well, you are... See, if I was a Syrian commander, I would say, you are on Syrian sovereign territory. I'm putting you on notice. You must exit the territory. But again, the only, you know, the caveat is, how much, you know, hardware do you want the U.S. to throw at you? Because that's what they will do. They operate by terror. And people talk about, well, they wish Iran would join in the fighting apropos Gaza. They wish Syria would join in the fighting apropos. Or even Hezbollah. All of them know something about fighting. They've all performed rather well. But you don't look for trouble unless it arrives at your doorstep, because your opponent, who is much larger, has everything he needs. America has 800 military bases around the world, and it controls the oceans, and it controls the air largely. So if you are a medium-sized country with regular weaponry, you know that if you're going to fight with the bully, you're going to have to do it in self-defense. You don't go adventuring. Yeah, I'll put it, there is one group, the Houthis. That's the exception proving the rule. The Houthis seem to know nothing about fear. I mean, they just say, well, let's see what happens. That's really quite an interesting phenomenon, the Red Sea issue.
Yeah, they fought the Saudis to a standstill when everybody said the Saudis were going to roll over them and crush them in 6 months, right? And the Saudis, it looks like they've kind of given up on that war, you know.
Well, actually, they've signed there's a ceasefire.
Yeah.
They're actually getting along. And I shouldn't say getting along, they're talking. And on this program, this is the Taylor Report, in case you're wondering, we spoke to Zafar Benkash about that. And he said that his analysis was that the Saudis don't want any more of this. And so this current crisis, we put it to Zafar, perhaps they're going to try to bring the Saudis in against the Houthi. And he said, no, they don't want any more of that. So that's where we find ourselves with this issue. By the way, I suppose, Phil, it's time we should mention also that we'll remind everybody, we're going to be talking to Professor Michael Lincoln about at 5:30. That on February 19, the Taylor Report will be moving to 11 o'clock, Monday mornings.
That's right. 11 a.m. on Mondays.
On Mondays. Yeah. We're going to be following Democracy Now!, which is, I have to say, in the recent programming, I followed it. It seems to me Democracy Now! Has really been doing excellent work. They're on this thing of the what to do, how you could be cutting off funding to the United Nations Relief Organization. And they had an authority on today. I think he has worked with the Norwegians on this. Incidentally, when you see a crack in the empire, you ought to mention in Norway, for reasons of conscience, I guess, political. They're not going along. And kudos to Democracy Now for bringing that to the forefront. They interviewed this individual today, featured on the program this morning. So anyway, on February 19, the Taylor Report will begin at 11 a.m. And we're happy about that. We like, you know, it's. I think the concept is let's have a string of voices covering all the major questions or crises going on in the world. So it should be a good thing. And Phil, you'll be available, right, Phil?
Well, I'll try to make myself as available as often as I can because this is a great show, and you're hearing things here that it's really, really hard to find and impossible to find in a lot of the mainstream media, I have to say. You know,
I would say impossible.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, impossible is the right word.
Well, like I just mentioned, I thought it was important to repeat what the government of Syria says, since this business that the U.S. is talking about occurred on their territory. At the bare minimum, it seems reasonable to ask the sovereign government of Syria, what is your opinion of what happened on your territory? And also to ask, what is your point of view on the U.S. having a military base on your territory where they I shouldn't say military base, yet they control a territory which includes oil and wheat. They have been known to burn the wheat crops, the Americans. They've been known and are extracting oil. And, you know, we're going to be talking about the International Court of Justice. Seems to me someone should be taking the U.S. to court over stealing Syrian oil. You know, it's because it's patent. You can say the United States is sovereign, but so is Syria.
Well, isn't that a function of U.S. exceptionalism, that they don't have to follow ordinary rules about stealing and property rights that everybody else in the world has to obey?
That really is where we are,
yes.
And the tragedy for Canada, and we don't talk enough about Canada's peculiar role in all this stuff, is that it's a vassal situation. And here we are, this is 2024, and we're all looking forward to the possibility of President Trump returning. And people say, well, the Canadians don't want Trump. And I would say that's true. But when he was president, we did what he asked us to do. And pardon me, he didn't ask. It's not his style. He doesn't ask. He said, you will do this. And that was the decision. So with Trump coming, it's time to ask, will Canada defend the United Nations? Because Trump is not going to be pro-UN, and Biden is barely involved with the UN. And you can tell by the conduct in recent days that the logic of their conduct is that they will undermine, destroy, you know, the functioning of the UN. And Canada should make up its mind. Is it going to go along with other countries and say the place to debate or the place to change a program is in the UN and not this situation we have at the moment, where Canada will simply, if the U.S. goes against the other UN nations, Canada will follow. That's where we are, in my opinion.